You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I remember watching the 86 World Cup and had a Shakey's pizza, and the TV was super small and really fuzzy, and you couldn't really make out who was who, but the energy was there and there were a lot of people there, so you could get kind of caught up in their enthusiasm, which is the power of the sport and the World Cup in particular.
Sports presents the 1986 World Cup Final. Brought to you by...
We got to idolize certain players, whether it was Michel Platini or Diego Maradona, these giant, godlike players making incredible plays and doing things that you wish you could do.
Jerez to Rostro. Deflection, stop it.
I just remember being caught up in it and just marveling at how great these players were and what they did and how they moved, and just planting that seed of this being more than just a hobby. This is an art form, and to perfect it would be something special.
That little kid, sitting on the floor eating pizza, would grow up to be Jimmy Conrad, the former U.S. men's national team defender. Today we find out how Jimmy went from watching the World Cup on TV to playing in one. And playing in a game that has gone down as one of the most epic matches in U.S. soccer history. I'm Nando Vila, and from Gimlet Media, this is We Came to Win, Extra Time. About a month before the World Cup kicks off, each national team names their squad. It's a huge moment for players, one of joy and relief for those who make the cut. But for the guys who don't make the cut, it's pure agony and despair. World Cups only come around once every 4 years, so a lot of players only ever get one shot. Before the U.S. announced their team for the 2006 World Cup in Germany, one player whose fate hung in the balance was Jimmy Conrad. Jimmy was a defender, and he'd had a decent career. At this point, he's 29, and he'd been playing in Major League Soccer for a few years. He carved out a reputation as a solid, reliable defender. He's the guy who keeps it simple, doesn't make too many mistakes. But Jimmy's career hadn't exactly been spectacular. A lot of soccer fans doubted whether he would make the team. And Jimmy had his own doubts, too.
Who am I to think I'm going to be on a World Cup team? You know, I was a kid that didn't get recruited out of high school. I walked on at UCLA. I didn't get drafted into MLS. I had to fight and scratch for everything. And so for that to push, and I didn't get a cap, my first cap till I was 28. You know, when most guys get a look at like 22, 23, 24 at the latest, I wasn't supposed to be there.
Jimmy made his debut for the U.S. national team in 2005. But after that, he was in and out of the team, and he spent most of his time on the bench. So when he did make it onto the field, it was really important that Jimmy played well and proved that he was good enough to make the World Cup squad. His biggest chance to do that came in March of 2006, a few months prior to the roster being announced. Jimmy started for the U.S. in a friendly against Germany, but things didn't quite go to plan. The U.S., with Jimmy playing in defense, were thrashed 4-1.
And I played terribly. I was not good that game.
After the match, Jimmy tried to seek reassurance from one of the team's veterans, goalkeeper Casey Keller.
When you're not playing well, sometimes you go to your teammates and commiserate, right? And sometimes you're looking for that support from your teammates to give you maybe a little bit of that, I'd say like a verbal hug. They don't always, not all the guys are into hugging physically, but that verbal hug, that verbal affirmation that, you know what, it's all right, we got the next one or whatever it is. When I was in the elevator after the game, I got into the elevator with Casey Keller, who was the goalkeeper at the time. And obviously, you know, he gave up 4 goals, so he's going to be upset. And I basically apologized for my performance. And he said something that was so matter of fact. Spirit was, well, it wasn't good enough. You just weren't good enough tonight. And I was already vulnerable, right? I was already ready to crumble on my own. But to have that come from one of the leaders of the team, I was like, all right. And then went to my room. I just like let loose and just cried for like 10 or 15 minutes. I mean, your whole dream is right there. And if you just would have had a good 90 minutes, you could have guaranteed you were going to a World Cup. And because I didn't, because the team didn't have a good 90 minutes, everything still felt in the balance.
On May 2nd of 2006, the U.S. coach, Bruce Arena, was scheduled to name his team for the World Cup. There were some players like Landon Donovan and Claudio Reyna that everyone knew would definitely make the squad. But after that Germany game, Jimmy had no idea if he'd be joining them.
I just went to training that morning. The announcement was going to come via Bruce on SportsCenter. They were going to announce the team on SportsCenter. So I did training. I don't even remember. I felt like I was in a cloud. I don't remember anything about training. Went home. My wife was at work. We're in Kansas City at the time, so I've got no immediate family around. So it's just me by myself. Because I'm so nervous, I cleaned the house like I've never cleaned the house before. And then at that time, we had, what, AOL Instant Messaging? So yeah. AIM. I was texting or AIMing with Landon Donovan. And so we're not saying much of anything. Obviously, he's on the team, but he sends me a note. He goes, hey, man, I got great news. And I was like, oh, man, my heart drops. Like, oh, here we go. And he goes, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico. And I was like, what a dick, you know? Who does that? He knows exactly that I'm waiting for this info, you know, to see if I make the team or not. And I know that he's, like, best friends with Bruce and the staff, and he totally set me up. So I watched SportsCenter with everybody else by myself in my Kansas City apartment. And once he named my name, it was just bananas from there. Texts, calls. I mean, it was unbelievable. And I was floating. I'm not a very good dancer, but I feel like I was Fred Astaire on that day. I was gliding around, singing in the rain, going around light posts and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it was unbelievable. And when my wife got home, we went and just walked. We just walked. We just wanted to walk. We walked to a restaurant. We got a bottle of wine. And it was the most incredible feeling I've had in my entire life. I can't believe I'm going to a World Cup.
When Jimmy arrived in Germany with the U.S. World Cup team, the fairy tale continued. Here he was, surrounded by the best players in the world and enjoying the perks that come with being an international soccer player.
Yeah, what I loved about the whole process, I guess, was getting fitted out for matching suits and getting our own personalized luggage and all that stuff, all the perks. This is something I had never really been exposed to because I wasn't called into any youth national teams. I wasn't called into the full team for a really long time. So enjoying these perks was something new to me, and I loved it. I soaked up everything.
On June 12th, the U.S. played their first game of the 2006 World Cup against the Czech Republic. At the previous tournament, the U.S. had made a run to the quarterfinals, so hopes were high that they could repeat that form. Jimmy wasn't named in the starting lineup. He was on the bench. But even so, just being part of a World Cup game was special.
Before the first game, there is so much hope for our country and what we're capable of. And obviously coming off of 2002, where we made it to the quarterfinals, you know, this was a big deal for us to go out there and prove it against a very good Czech Republic team that we were the real deal and that we could back up how we performed in 2002. I'll say that what I remember most was the national anthem. The national anthem never meant as much to me as it did before that first game or listening to it for that first game against Czech Republic. It was incredible. I get emotional thinking about it. It gives me goosebumps now. To hear the section of American fans singing it, I mean, I really felt like an American. I felt like I'm doing this for my country. And it was an incredible feeling. And the national anthem's never resonated with me as much as it has since then or before. I'll say that the game itself didn't go well. 2 minutes in, we gave up a goal to Jan Koller, and I was sitting next to Ben Olsen going, oh my God, that guy's good. And they were so good. They just owned us in every stretch of the imagination.
The game ended 3-0 to the Czech Republic, a terrible start to the competition for the U.S., and a result that meant the team would have to avoid defeat in their next game to have any chance of advancing in the competition. Just one problem. That next game was against Italy, one of the best teams in the world. and stacked with superstars like Andrea Pirlo, one of the most graceful, majestic players to ever kick a ball, the supremely skilled Francesco Totti, and Fabio Cannavaro, one of the all-time great defenders. And not that it matters, but they all had great hair too.
Every point, every goal now crucial in a section that'll go to the wire.
Again, Jimmy was on the bench, feet away from the action. And from his vantage point, the U.S. made a good start, playing with real courage and taking the game to the Italians. Clint Dempsey in particular was creating a lot of early chances, running right at the Italians.
Now Dempsey.
So he got out there and was just going at guys. He was dribbling, he was adding some flair and some personality to the game, something that we lacked against Czech Republic. And I think we responded well to that. And I thought we had some confidence.
But, and there's always a but in these stories, isn't there? Despite the U.S. dominating the early exchanges, it was Italy who took the lead. A perfect Andrea Pirlo free kick found the head of Alberto Gilardino.
Gilardino makes an early run! He's there! He scores! And Italy lead against the USA!
But the U.S. kept coming forward, and they got the equalizer when Italian defender Cristian Zaccardo accidentally kicked the ball into his own net.
It's come through the far post, it's an own goal by Zaccardo!
And the tide continued to turn in the U.S.'s favor when, a minute later, the Italian midfielder Daniele De Rossi was sent off for elbowing Brian McBride. It was such a bad hit that blood was streaming down McBride's face.
It's a red card! De Rossi is dismissed!
You know, he nails McBride in the face, and so now we're up a man. You're like, oh my God, here we go, let's party.
But, and there's another but, just before halftime, the USA went down to 10 men as well.
Pablo Mastroianni, had a rush of blood to the head and got a straight red card.
Mastroianni slid in from behind on Andrea Pirlo, crunching his ankle.
Watch it. He's off.
When the players went into the locker room for the halftime break, both teams had a goal and both teams had a man sent off. As things stood, the U.S.'s hopes of staying in the competition are alive, and so were Jimmy's individual hopes of getting called off the bench and making it into a World Cup game.
And at halftime, I think we're all feeling pretty good. And for me, I was like, all right, cool. So 1-1, down to 10 men. Our guys are probably going to get tired. That means, you know, if we still want to hold the 1-1, I might get in this game. So I got to be ready.
So Jimmy mentally prepared himself to come on. He thought it might be in the closing minutes if the U.S. needed another defender to hold on to a draw. But it turned out he'd be needed a lot sooner. Because right after the second half kicked off, this wild game got even crazier. A few minutes after the teams went back out onto the field, defender Eddie Pope was sent off.
A yellow card. He's already got one of those. And the USA are down to 9 men.
I mean, I'm just sitting there, kind of in shock, just like everybody else. Like, holy crap, we were in a really good position, and now we're down a man with 44 minutes left to go. What are we going to do? You know, I'm almost there as a fan on the bench going, Jesus, what is Bruce going to do here? What's his call? And then when they come over to me and they're like, hey, you're going to go in? I'm like, oh my God. So you just jump up and I just started running. I didn't have much time to warm up, but I had to get a couple sprints in, you know, so I got my couple sprints in, got my shin guards on as soon as possible, made sure my shoes were tied, got my jersey on. It must have been, all things considered, maybe 3 minutes where I did sprints, the knees to the chest, got all my stuff on, and was over to the board to check in. And I remember thinking that there was nothing to lose. I had nothing to lose. We were in a position that I've been in my whole life. We were the underdog. We're not supposed to get anything out of this. Nobody expects us to do anything here, just like nobody expected me to do anything either. I couldn't write a better position or situation for me to start my first World Cup game, to relax and to play right to my strengths and what I think I'm best at.
Italy started to use the extra man to their advantage. They're one of the best teams in the world, remember? So they play smart, hold on to possession, and look for a way to score, all the while wearing the U.S. down as they chase the ball. But the U.S. defense stood firm. And there was Jimmy Conrad, right in the heart of the U.S. back line, doing what he does best. The simple stuff, staying in position, holding the line, making sure nothing gets past him.
Now, I made an incredible tackle on Andrea Pirlo once.
Pirlo's the supremely gifted Italian midfielder with the sweet right foot and the perfect hair.
Pretty proud of myself, because that guy doesn't get tackled very often. It's just as vivid for me now as it was back then. The lights and, you know, all the cameras. And you knew then that every roll of the ball matters. At the World Cup level, you don't have time to think of anything but the next play. That is it. And it's the most amazing thing, and I love it.
To hold out when you're down a man against a team like Italy is heroic. They're one of the best in the world. But it turned out that the U.S. weren't just content to sit back and hope for a draw. They started to push forward. They weren't just repelling attacks. They were launching their own. And in the 65th minute,
DeMarcus Beasley.
Beasley gets the ball in the middle of midfield. He plays it out wide to an overlapping Carlos Bocanegra. We're finally getting numbers in the attacking third. Carlos hits somewhat questionable ball back to Beasley, who's now entered into the box. And Bees does really, really well with it to get it off his feet and take a good first touch, and then he hits it.
Beasley shot! Oh, Beasley scored, but the flag is raised! It won't count!
But the celebrations didn't last long. The goal was called back for offside, and the score was still 1-1.
I remember not celebrating with Bees, who was already ready to go to the corner flag and start to have a party, because I was like, there's no way. Like, we're not that lucky. And so, it was a short-lived thrill, that's for sure.
Italy came back at the U.S., pressing for a winner. Their team of superstars probing the U.S. defense, trying to find a way past Jimmy and his teammates.
Gattuso, Pirlo wants it. He can strike them. Looking here for Del Piero. Oh, what a good save, Casey.
But still, the U.S. and Jimmy stood firm. The game ended in a 1-1 draw. So take me to when the ref actually blew the whistle. What did you feel right when the final whistle was blown?
I felt relief on one hand, and then I felt kind of sad on another because I didn't want the game to end. I wanted to keep playing. I knew that playing a game or playing in the World Cup is going to come and go so quickly that I didn't want it to stop. I wanted to appreciate that moment and to continue to play against some players that I've looked up to my whole life for as long as possible. So it was mixed, those feelings. But ultimately, even though we didn't win, it felt like a win. We were celebrating and cheering, and you could feel a collective pride amongst the group. That was a vital result for us, not only for that tournament, but just in general, because I think we showcased what makes our country in some odd way, why we're great, you know, why we don't ever give up. We always fight for everything. We're going to give you everything we have until the last minute. And I think we really kind of symbolized what America stands for. In some, I don't know, it seems too grandiose to say it like that, but in some ways that's how it felt, that we were out there representing our country and being a reflection of how our country views themselves.
After that game, things went downhill for the U.S. They lost their next match and were eliminated from the tournament. And this would be Jimmy's first and last World Cup. But that Italy game is still fondly remembered by U.S. fans as one of the team's finest World Cup performances. Because a draw against Italy is always a good result. But when you're a man down for a lot of the match, it's a great result. And it looks even better when you take into account that Italy went on to win the 2006 World Cup. And the U.S. were the only team they didn't beat at the tournament. So to U.S. soccer fans, this is the most victorious tie game imaginable.
But even now, what's it, 12 years on, I'm still getting people talking to me about the Italy game.
Yeah, like us.
Yeah, you like you guys too.
Yeah.
Here at We Came to Win, we don't announce our squad on SportsCenter. We do it here, in the credits. Our starting producers are Emma Morgenstern, Emily Ulbricht, and Gofan Mputubwele. Our super subs, always waiting to step in and hold the line like Jimmy, are Anna Foley and Jasmine Romero. Our captain told me that I got to host this podcast via a message on AIM. He's Matthew Nelson. The editors who decide whether we make the squad for the podcast World Cup are Caitlin Kenny, Devin Taylor, and Jessica Weisberg. And the first name on the team sheet, as always, is the great Bobby Lord. He scored this episode. He mixed this episode. He wrote an original song for this episode. And he chose that cool elevator ding sound effect. Oh, and I somehow snuck onto the team as well. I'm your host, Nando Vila. We're back next week with a full-length episode. It's all about the most infamous referee in World Cup history, Byron Moreno, and why he still provokes reactions like this.
If I have to be explicit, it was like a shitty asshole. It was like the worst ref that I never seen in my life.
He makes such crazy call against Italy.
We were probably the best team ever since 200 years, and we just lost because of him.
We Came to Win is a production of Gimlet Media in association with Fusion. We love hearing feedback on the show, so rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can also tweet at us using the hashtag WeCameToWin. I love to talk sports online, so I'll probably respond. You should also follow Gimlet Media on Twitter. The handle is @GimletMedia.